This is fun! The FU Network!
I'm Stephen Kersner. Welcome to the No Bullpen, one of our Election 2019 editions. And today we're going to talk about a promise being made by Andrew Scheer's conservatives, but it's one that is made by political parties all the time, whether they are the party that is in power or the party that hopes to assume power. And it goes back generations. And that promise is, no matter how they word it, they're going to put more money back in your pockets because you as a consumer know how to spend your money, your hard-earned money, better than they do. And they're going to put more money back in your pockets. And we're going to talk today about whether that's true, whether there has ever really been a significant middle-class tax cut that has actually resulted in any significant gain for as far as disposable income. Also, when the money is going back in people's pockets, where is that money coming from? And is the money that's going back in people's pockets more expensive than they think it is? Because it's got to come from somewhere. We've got today on the panel Leanna Kersner, who is a lecturer, a journalist, a YouTuber, an influencer on YouTube, expert on matters relating to politics, social issues, issues relating to women, many other things, especially video games. Thank you for joining us, Leanna.
You left out that we're married.
Oh, yeah, I forgot.
It's just such a, we're married.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, Leanna, that's why we have the same last name.
Yes.
Okay, so Leanna is here. We've got with us one of our regular panelists and producer of this program, Justin Whitehead. Justin is an expert in many things, and I discovered today that he'd studied economics, political science, and applied ethics at the University of Victoria. I didn't know what your educational background was before. I didn't know you'd studied economics. So it was a nice surprise that you'll be talking to us and you'll know what you're talking about.
Always so, happy to surprise.
Yeah, it's always good to be surprised. We've got with us John Shepherd, who is politically lost. Used to be a conservative, but now finds that there's not very much liberal about Trudeau, and religious conservatives creep him out. And he says he's got a newfie sense of humor. Thanks for joining us, John.
Well, thank you for having me.
And Andrew McLeod, who is a legislative bureau chief at the TIE.ca. And just for those of us who don't know, Andrew, how is the TIE pronounced and what does it mean?
You had it right there, TIE. And it's a sport salmon, like a sort of a big feisty fish that you want to catch when you're fishing. It also has a First Nations element to it that it's a sort of a grand chief in First Nations culture as well. And out here on the West Coast, there are lots of things named Tai'i, roads, fishing lodges, motels, you know, all kinds of things.
Great. And you're coming to us from where?
I'm in Victoria.
You're in Victoria. All right. So Justin, you went to university there. Maybe you guys know each other. Okay. Let's start with, you wrote an article, Andrew, focusing specifically on this term of the Trudeau government and the promise that they made to make tax cuts and for the middle class, make things easier. A lot of interesting statistics in your article. What did you find about whether these tax cuts, whether the Trudeau government actually put money back in people's pockets? And if they did, how effective was it?
Yeah, I thought it was an interesting question, just because if you remember like 4 years ago when the campaign launched and we had the first debate, and Trudeau sort of looked right at the camera as he does, and he said something like, you know, I want you to think about whether or not you're better off than you were 4 years ago when Stephen Harper came to power. And it's interesting to me in that, you know, 4 years later, now we get to put the question to him. I mean, the short answer is they did some things, you know, like they got rid of a bunch of the boutique tax cuts, like things like the child fitness amount and that sort of thing. And they redistributed the child tax benefit. They claim something like 90% of people see more from it. And early on, they cut taxes on income between, I think it was like $45,000 and $90,000. which is essentially like upper middle class. You know, the median income is something like $45,000, so half of people make less than that, and wouldn't have seen anything from that particular tax cut. And you know, so people making $90,000 are making well more than the median. So yeah, they did some things. I don't know. Like if it's one of those sort of feeling things too. Like if you ask people, how do you feel? Like, do you feel better off? I don't know that many would say they do.
It's interesting because you hear talk about how the economy is good and you look at statistics and statistics do back it up that the economy is good, but you'll also find lots of people and people that I know as well who don't feel that they've really advanced much. And in your article, you also mentioned that purchasing power, despite all this purchasing power, which is really the thing that determines how much money you got in your pockets, purchasing power has not increased with the rate of inflation. Is that correct?
No, unemployment's gone down, and there's been some wage growth. There was sort of, I think it was like around 3% last year, but then it sort of flatlined. There was like 6 months where there was like no wage growth, like the most recent 6 months that are that we have records for. And meanwhile, like inflation's been going up, well, more in BC than elsewhere, but about 2% nationally. So there's been some wage growth, which you'd expect when unemployment's low, like when people are having a hard time attracting employees because almost everyone who wants a job is working. You'd expect wages to get pushed up, but it hasn't really happened. Meanwhile, the price of everything has gone up, so it's tough to feel ahead. And you should also like correct for like when you talk about how people feel, like you know, most of us, like over 4 or 5 years, you know, usually like people would expect to be better off at say 35 than they were at 30 or 45 than they were at 40. You know, just, you know, they've had more time to save, more time to pay down debt, more time to pay their mortgage, you know, whatever, like just by time passing, they should feel better. I'm not sure that that's the case for a lot.
There's a lot of headwinds from the rest of the world that impacts us here. And I know, you know, certainly personally, when I started in the television business when I was 15 years old, I didn't foresee a time when it would collapse in 2008, 2009, and has continued to shrivel up like a testicle in a cold pool. Is the best way I can describe it. There's a lot of people 50 plus who didn't realize that their skills would, like their whole industry would collapse out from under them. So there's that factor. And the reason we're doing this topic is because it was Leanna's idea, because she mentioned when governments talk about, and when Scheer is talking about, specifically the conservative is talking about saying, we're going to put more money back in your pocket. That money comes from somewhere. Leanna, talk about how your reaction was to this particular promise.
Well, I was just finishing high school when Mike Harris came into power in Ontario, running on the Common Sense Revolution, right? And it was the same thing. You know, we're going to look after, whenever you hear somebody call people taxpayers instead of citizens, you kind of know where they're at. But, you know, he cut taxes. He cut taxes by about 30% for the middle class. He also cut social assistance by over 21%, fired a bunch of nurses, eliminated grade 13, and killed a whole lot of social programs that really impacted the neighborhood I grew up in, which was the Jane Finch neighborhood of Toronto. And a lot of the programs that got cut, now, I should be clear, I had graduated like a couple years before the double cohort, so I just missed it. But all those programs that were in that neighborhood designed to prevent kids from joining gangs were cut. They were either significantly reduced or they were eliminated. Fast forward to today, we have a serious gun violence problem in the Toronto area directly connected to those cuts. Under Harris, he demolished the social programs that gave kids an alternative to gangs. And so when you don't feel safe walking the streets of Toronto because there's shootings at a Raptors event, do you really feel like you're getting ahead? No, you don't. When there's fewer nurses, when your quality of care is less, when you get fewer services from the hospital. So in my case that, you know, when I had knee surgery, sure, the surgery itself was covered. The physiotherapy wasn't. which is an essential part of recovery from surgery. I had to pay for it out of my own pocket. Am I further ahead? No, that ate all the middle class tax cuts I benefited from and then some. I ended up further behind because an individual person cannot get the economies of scale when negotiating with, say, a healthcare provider that a government can. That's the problem with the more money in your pocket argument.
Okay. How do you feel about that, Justin? Thoughts?
I completely agree.
Okay. Well, then nothing to hear from you.
wait, though. He's on the left coast. They've got different issues out there.
Okay. I will give you a chance to make. I'll give you a chance to say something valuable. Go ahead.
Leanna has a very good skill of psychically going through all my notes that I've taken.
Actually, I'm just spying on you.
here on the left coast, though. I mean, over the last 4 years, we've seen a real explosion in the problem with housing. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much of that you can really attribute to the federal government, but as far as people feeling like they're further ahead, I would say most in BC would say no.
Okay. John Shepherd. John, in all of your years that you've heard about tax cuts, have you ever experienced a tax cut that you felt was significant?
For me, no, but tax cuts, I mean, right now I'm doing pretty well for myself, but you know, when I look at the issue of, you know, what Leanna was talking about, government having money or us having money, one of the things I just kept thinking about was, you know, all of our provinces are going in debt. I'm in Newfoundland and Labrador, mm-hmm. and we're going in further in debt than just about anybody, minus probably Ontario. If a person was as bad with money as the governments are, to me, I wouldn't be on the show right now. I think I would be repossessing other people's vehicles. Okay. I don't know if that makes any sense, but.
Well, it does to you. That's an important thing. But you're saying that you've never personally felt.
I'm the Justin Trudeau trying to enter the middle class.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure what the middle class is right now. Words like the tax cuts for everybody, the fighting for the middle class, I've never heard proper definitions for it. What is my earnings got to be middle class?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that keeps shifting.
My understanding was it is 100% to 150% mean income.
What does that mean?
Well, it basically means average income. So $45,000.
Yes.
To around, well, I guess 200%. So around, most people define the middle class is you earn between $50,000 and $250,000 a year.
That tends to be the middle class.
It's this ridiculous. It's huge.
It's huge.
If you ask people, are you middle class? Something like 85% of Canadians say they are. So
yeah.
So it depends.
Andrew, what's your response to what Leanna said about the effects of the Harris cuts this many years later on our social fabric?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we went through something similar here in BC where 2001, the government changed and they'd campaigned on making a significant tax cut. And then sort of the first day in office, it was a 25% cut to personal income taxes. I wrote a piece recently, a guy named George Abbott, who'd been a health minister in that government, went back to school and did his PhD. And for his thesis, he wrote about sort of what it was like to be in that government. And he basically said, look, we took away all our revenues and then we had to figure out what to do with that. So they'd committed to maintaining health and education, which meant that everything else just got slashed. And I mean, there were all kinds of scandals in BC around that time to do with child welfare in particular, you know, kids who were left in homes where they ended up dead and that kind of thing. And so there was sort of, you know, this legacy of those cuts. I think there is a very knee-jerk thing of like you ask people like, do you want money left in your pocket? And everyone goes, oh yeah, sure. And you don't think ahead to that comes from programs, that comes from services, that comes from, you know, anti-gang violence, as Leanna said, you know, all the things that make a society sort of worth living in, right? It becomes an unfriendlier place where you have risks that you didn't have before.
All right. I mean, I think we're all old enough to remember when Stephen Harper rode to power promising to cut the GST to take 2 points off of it, 1 point each year, which denied the federal government millions, billions, I think it is. Yeah.
Actually, and then he ran deficits. But he ran deficits.
Like, yes.
That's the problem with sheer promising this now. We're already running deficits. Like Harper squandered a surplus, right? We're already running deficits. So promising to cut taxes, that means they're either going to run up debt or they're going to cut services. There's no way the numbers work either way and any other way. And after screaming that Trudeau spent, you know, ran up greater deficits than he promised, Scheer is now promising to cut revenues. Think about it this way. If you are a middle class, if you are a family and you have a mortgage and you have monthly bills and you have less money coming in every month, that means you have to cut back or you have to run up the credit cards. Government is the same way. And to borrow John's metaphor, a government can only run up so much debt before they either have to raise taxes, which is a good way to not get reelected, or they have to cut services.
Okay. Now, let me ask you, John, do you think people are making the connection between tax cuts and service cuts? Do you think people are really being fooled nowadays that these tax cuts are coming at no cost?
No, I think they understand it. One of the big areas where it's coming from is Alberta. Yeah, they're a pretty libertarian province. And
until their economy cratered, and then they started screaming for government help.
Yeah, exactly. But they want to work. That's their primary. What they want is the jobs. They want their well-paying 2 weeks in, 2 weeks off job. That's what Alberta wants. Here in Newfoundland and Labrador, we depend on Alberta. That's our biggest contributor. We have almost 40% of our workforce, 33%, I believe, is public service. If you look at a basic accounting principle, like the debit has to match the credit, the debit that we got coming out for pay, we'll never have a credit that comes back in and our debt grows. We can't cut that. We have really no private sector in Newfoundland and Labrador.
That's interesting. Other than Screech.
I was going to say there is some media production that goes on in Newfoundland because in the Maritimes because of tax credits.
Yeah, and the Jason Momoa show, which was a really good show.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that was the only one that really wasn't a CBC show as of now.
Okay. Andrew, what about you? Do you think, are people still being fooled that they can get their taxes cut and it won't come and kick them in the ass some other way?
I do think it's a seductive pitch that you know, we're going to leave more money in your pockets. Like, it sounds good. But I do think enough of us have lived through it. You know, in BC, I was talking about what happened in 2001. Leanna was talking about the Harris government. You know, I think we've seen it enough times, even the Harper years. You know, as you said, they did things to sort of limit the amount of revenue they were bringing in, and it limited what they could do. I do think people get that more than they used to. One way I would hope that people would think about it is, you know, when they talk about leaving money in pockets, you know, the question should be, well, whose pockets? And I have a piece up today that looks at, you know, what they call tax expenditures, you know, basically like all the write-offs that you have for, you know, your personal, basically on the working income tax credit and that kind of thing. There was a report a few years ago out of the CCPA where they went through something like 70 of them that apply on the personal side. And only five of them were progressive, meaning that they left more money in the pockets of people who were in the bottom half of earners. All the rest of them were either neutral or regressive, meaning they, you know, people who made more money kept more money. You know, one of them, like the stock options one, where you know, often CEOs or high level people in big companies will get paid in stock options instead of income, and part of that is because, you know, the income from capital gains and from dividends from stocks is taxed at a much lower rate than income is. Mm-hmm. So it's an expenditure of like billions a year that most of us, you know nothing about. It affects something like 1 in 1,000 Canadians. You know, there's like 1 in 1,000 who benefit from it, but the people who do, it's like $20,000 a year. So it's a significant amount of money for them.
But you're talking about high earners is what you're saying.
Yeah. And so I'm just saying, like when they're talking about leaving money, and even if it's just straight income tax, you know, like somebody who makes $200,000 a year, if there's a 25% cut to personal income tax, they keep a lot more money than somebody who makes $50,000 a year. You know, it's just math.
It becomes pocket change at that point. If you're making $50,000 a year, 25% tax cut, it doesn't amount to a whole lot of dollars. It doesn't matter what the percentage is. It's how many dollars does that actually leave you? How much disposable income? How further ahead are you going to be? Justin, your thoughts.
Well, like one of the parts of this promise that Scheer is making is he's got what he's calling it's an EI tax credit, basically. And he's trying to use that. It's a 15% non-refundable tax credit that will go to people who end up on EI maternity leave. The problem with that, again, is, well, for one, about 30% of new mothers in Canada don't qualify for EI maternity leave just because, you know, they don't have the right number of hours, or if they're self-employed, they haven't made enough money during the period that they require them to qualify. But like you were just discussing, you have to make about $50,000 a year before you will really see much of a significant return on that. And a lot of the people most of the people who would need that extra boost the most won't even get anything from it because they don't earn enough money to begin with to even be taxed for this to start with. So a 15% tax credit when you're not paying taxes already amounts to nothing for the people who need it the most.
Okay. Now,
I actually also had kind of a philosophical rage moment when he announced that too, because maternity leave for a working woman is not charity. It is deferred income, meaning that is money you earned, meaning I would prefer it be taxed as income because damn it, I worked for that. That is income. Do not treat, you know, maternity leave as a handout. It is an investment in our society. And I just find the whole frame on that so paternalistic, that women are these shrinking little things that need help over and on top of what Justin is saying. I actually found it like, it told me a lot about the frame that Andrew Scheer is bringing to this, similar with the home heating tax cut. I actually thought that that was going to cause more problems than it did. He stepped on his message, because my thought was like, most people, because of the way that the carbon tax rebates are set up, most people are already getting a decrease on their tax returns for their home heating as an offset for the carbon tax. So he's basically just repackaging it and making it across the board cut. Now, who does this benefit? Not the four-person families or the people living in apartments or townhouses, the infamous townhouse. It's going to benefit people who are living in these gigantic monster homes that cost a lot to heat, because they are the ones that are burning more fossil fuels. They are the ones that, you know, usually have gas guzzler cars. They're the ones that are going to benefit the people who don't need the help, as Justin said.
Yeah. Okay. Go over to John. John, do you feel that for your tax dollar, you're fairly taxed? Do you feel that you're getting the services that when you pay your taxes, you're like, okay, I'm paying taxes, but I'm getting something for it? Do you feel you're getting value?
Oh God, no. But that might just be by the fact of where I live. I'm extremely taxed. Everything went up in taxes 4 years ago. Everything got a bill put onto it. There was a joke called cover charge NL that there was a cover charge to live here. We to say, you know, I love the argument, you know, this is what pays for our roads. It's like, well, they don't really do a good job on those roads. and they seem like a road that's built this year is in worse condition than a road that was built 40 years ago. But I do see good stories out of Nova Scotia, such as them finding a good use for plastics, putting that into the road mix. Same with Manitoba, I believe it was. But here in Newfoundland and Labrador and the majority of Atlantic Canada, it would be hard to say that. Like, I can't, I feel comfortable talking Alberta in the sense of what my friends have told me, but to talk BC or anything like that, you know, then that would be hard for me to make any kind of.
Okay. Andrew, your thoughts, you've done a lot of obviously research for the articles that you've been doing for the TIE on these particular subjects. Do you think that Canadians feel that they're getting value for the taxes that they're paying?
Yeah, it's a tough question. And I mean, it gets confused too, because I mean, there's some we pay to municipal government, right? We pay our property taxes, and that's supposed to look after certain services like, you know, waste removal and snow removal where there's snow and that kind of thing. And then we pay provincial taxes, and that's, you know, largely schools, hospitals, and that kind of thing. And then there's the federal taxes, which is like, you know, the army, foreign relations, they help out with the health, you know, their transfers to provinces through the federal government. So it can be a little hard to know who to blame when you don't feel like you get value. Yeah, it's the kind of thing that people poll on, and I haven't looked recently at polling numbers on it. I suspect if you asked 10 different people, you'd get 10 different opinions on whether they were getting value for their tax dollars.
Okay.
So now, see, that's an interesting point Andrew brings up, because the thing that most people feel in terms of quality of life tends to be municipal government measures, right? Municipalities are broke, and you know, provinces are going broke, and part of that is some of the clawbacks that happened under 10 years of Harper, and so quality of life decreased in various provinces because provinces and cities had to do more and more and more with less and less and less. If you look at, you know, city of Toronto or a large city like Vancouver, the minute you start getting big cities, you get big city problems. And in order for, you know, the economic engines of Canada to prosper and to sort of, hey, spill out into some of these other provinces that could use, you know, transfer payments like Newfoundland, for instance, there needs to be federal support for those municipalities, because cities like Calgary, Vancouver, Toronto, they all punch above their weight class in terms of importance to the economy. And they have been choked for at least a decade, possibly two.
Okay. John, you wanted to say something.
Yeah. It was about what Leanna just said about, you know, payments to us. We are a half province, but the problem is the one thing we have is a love of spending money we don't have. We should have enough money to properly govern ourselves, but we just love to spend the money at our government level. And it's, you know, it's the provincial government who will then beg the federal government for even more money. If you look at the last 4 years and the previous years before that under our PC government, our PC government ran up massive deficits because they couldn't get any money from Stephen Harper.
That's very interesting.
So that's pretty much what I just said. But I mean, the Maritimes are getting whacked by climate change right now. So it's very expensive to live in those provinces. Like, let's not give short shrift to that.
Okay, so we're all... Now, sorry, go on.
I was going to say that for the last 4 years, the deficits that we didn't run up as much... We didn't run up as much because we did pretty well out of Justin Trudeau's government. Mm-hmm. But if that leaves, then our deficits, the amount we saved on our deficits, we put onto our debt.
Well, it's interesting that John mentioned Nova Scotia as doing well out in the Maritimes, because when Harper cut the GST, Nova Scotia raised the provincial sales tax 2 points as a deficit fighting measure. So it's interesting that John focused on Nova Scotia's doing well, because it sounds like they had the foresight to take advantage of that GST cut. So people wouldn't feel a difference. 2% is 2%, status quo, but they took the opportunity.
Yeah, that is an interesting move by our government to make. Now, so basically, I think if I was to sum it up, we don't feel that these promises materialize, these promises of more money in your pocket, even if it is actually some more money, some extra dollars in your pocket, it comes out of your other pocket for things you wind up having to pay for that you didn't have to pay for before in services or in quality of life in the community you're in. So what I wonder, because of the number of times we've heard those very that very phrasing, we're going to put more money back in your pocket, is this a potent promise for Andrew Scheer, or is this wallpaper that's almost Charlie Brown's teacher that people aren't even like they expect to hear this, so it's not going to have any impact? Andrew, your thoughts?
I don't know. I do think a certain number of people find it appealing. I do think it taps into an anxiety of you don't feel like you're getting ahead. Right, like there is polling that suggests something like half of Canadians are, you know, one paycheck away from, you know, financial disaster. You know, basically that we're living paycheck to paycheck, half of us. And so it sort of it taps into that, but it's going that next step of like, well, what are we getting value for, and where does it go? And you know, leaving more money in my pocket doesn't necessarily help if the price of everything goes up, and if I sacrifice, you know, things like clean hospitals and you know, schools without too crowded classrooms and that sort of thing. One thing I was hoping to bring up. You know, this idea that we're running up the deficits, running deficits and running up the debt has come up. And it is worth noting that interest rates are very low right now, especially for governments. You know, Canadian governments, which are relatively stable, can borrow money for, well, you know, 2% less sometimes. Like, you know, what they're giving on bonds is very low. European governments at this point, some of them are offering negative rates where they're actually paying, you know, they're saying they're going to pay back their debt in dollars that are worth less than what they're borrowing them in. So it's not necessarily an awful thing for governments to borrow at a time when interest rates are low.
Yeah.
Well, that it's always, it's the ratios that matter. It's you know, the GDP yes. ratios, so, and those are the things, GDP to debt, because mm-hmm. everyone talks about deficit debt, deficit debt, deficit debt. What are we doing to our children and our grandchildren? And they pull the Sally Struthers on us, and without realizing, you know, what are we doing for our children and grandchildren? Well, we're continuing to have a society now that we're paying for that's worth them inheriting. Justin, you had a point you wanted to make.
Well, just in general, you don't have to look very far to find, you know, more right-wing parties promising to protect, you know, quote unquote, the little guy. And then once they get into power, it really doesn't shape up that way. And yet they just continue the same messaging as though it is. Like another example in Canada, the Canada Child Benefit that was mentioned earlier, that the Conservatives all voted against that in 2016 when it was put forward. But then, you know, he's talking about, oh, we care about families, and oh, we're not going to touch that at all, even though we voted against it before. We're not going to touch it, you know. It's, and then he goes on to sort of say, like, well, Trudeau claims, and he uses that very carefully, Trudeau claims that it's lifted 300,000 children out of poverty. As though to just sort of dismiss that, like 300,000 children being lifted out of poverty is either not a big deal or it's just simply being made up. Like yeah. that's huge. That's like 3.7 million families in Canada every year have gained from that child benefit, which is okay. But it's been expensive, but it's yeah. giving money to people, you know, who need it. And when you give money to people who need it, they spend it.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Well, that's the key.
Oh, sorry. I just remember too, it replaced a program that gave money sort of across the board, yeah. right? Mm-hmm. So somebody who was making $1 million a year got the same as somebody who was making, you know, 20,000 a year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so what it does is it gives more money to people at the lower end, and it phases out as incomes get higher.
Yeah.
As Justin says,
which only makes sense because the people with the higher incomes aren't really going to miss it.
Right.
Leanna, you had a question you wanted to ask.
Well, I actually have a comment and then a question, if that's okay.
Yep.
I'm going to sound like a bit of a liberal firebrand right now. I don't intend to. It's just I follow the facts and the facts just tend to lead me there. The Conservatives were the only party to oppose a national daycare strategy. The Conservatives in Ontario were the only party to oppose a provincial pharmacare strategy. How exactly are they the party of putting money back in people's pockets? I don't see a plan to, say, have high density housing tied to income. So if you want a nice townhouse, like Andrew Scheer claims is the bottom rung of the social strata, okay, you don't get that. But if you want to raise a family in a condo, it should be tied to income. It should be affordable. Mm-hmm. You know, the fact that housing is being driven up by people who are buying, foreign buyers who they sit there vacant, this is all stuff governments could do something about. I just named three things that would actually, in real terms, put money back in the pockets of Canadians, and the Conservatives have opposed them all. Yeah. So my question to the more concerned, and you know, my question to everybody is, what is something you think would meaningfully, like an actual concrete change that would put money back in the pockets of people who need them?
And not cost as much going out the back door, you mean?
Yeah, that would actually like sort of cost itself and not lead to a cut in social programs. These are probably social programs themselves, but John's raring to go. So,
okay.
Well, there's one thing I could think of, and you know, like in the Democrat debates down in the States right now, I'm a big Andrew Yang fan. And if you look at social programs that, you know, EI, anything of that nature, that it's more administration based now than anything. If we look at that, anything that can get us a universal basic income, but universal basic income through government, I think it's both a conservative and a liberal policy, because if you can reduce the amount of government workers, that always seems to me like something that conservatives are interested in. But if you could also help people by giving them this money that they do need, that's a liberal policy to me. So wouldn't that be an option?
So what you're saying, if I understand, is that replace these unemployment insurance, disability benefits with just a guaranteed minimum income across the board and cut down on the paperwork?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Okay. What do you think, Justin?
So especially with the universal basic income concept, it's funny how it is supported by economists on both the left and the right of the spectrum, but for very different reasons. And it's quite telling. As on the left, the reason you typically hear is, well, it's just, you know, with increasing AI and automation, there's millions and millions of jobs that are currently disappearing and will continue to disappear. So we need something in place to catch all of these people who are going to be left jobless in the not too distant future. The right wing politicians, economists, even Friedman supported it in a way, but not for the same reason. They support it because they recognize that in order to keep making money for, you know, business owners, corporations, etc., people have to have something to spend. And that is their cutoff point for it is, well, once the money dries up and nobody has anything left to spend, then I guess we'll have to give them something. But really, it's sort of like redistributing taxpayer dollars overall to continue funneling it up to the people who already sort of own everything. So it's kind of a stopgap measure that both sides can maybe agree on. And I think it is necessary, but it will require further systemic change down the line in order to, you know, for it to not just basically stay as it is now, but people aren't working. Instead, they're just, you know, getting a bit of money to spend.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Andrew, your answer to Leanna's question.
I did notice the Green Party was championing a universal basic income. That's sort of the main thing on their affordability for all page on their website. I was on there today. For me, I actually wrote a book a few years ago that was on a lot of this stuff, and it came up with sort of like, I don't know, 30 or 40.
Plug the book, Andrew. Oh, what's it called?
It's called A Better Place on Earth. And it was sort of on economic inequality. One of the conclusions, and it followed on some of the writing out of England on this, was essentially that you know, societies that are more equal tend to be better in all kinds of ways, including better economically. Like everyone across the board tends to be healthier, and you know, happier in so many ways. And one of the conclusions, though, was it doesn't matter how you get more equal, just that you end up there. So pretty much anything that you know, taxes at the top end of the income scale and redistributes it at the bottom end is great. I wrote another book, which I'll plug.
Yay, capitalism!
Came out last year. Yeah, this will help make things more equal by selling more of my books.
There you go.
Available on Amazon.
Yeah, and anywhere where okay books are sold.
We're okay.
So the second one was called.
That was very Canadian, by the way. That was a very Canadian promotion.
Sorry. Quiet, shilling is happening. Yeah. Don't step on the title. Go ahead, Andrew.
So the second one is called Altogether Healthy, and it was. You know, basically, it was sort of the first book in the other direction of like, you know, we have these gaps in health between, you know, different parts of the country, different populations. You know, someone in BC, you know, the average life expectancy is 80 something. In Newfoundland, where John is, it's like, I don't know, 6 years less. And sort of, why is that? And a big part of the book is sort of plugging this idea that a lot of how people end up has to do with the kinds of childhood they have, and a lot of the kind of childhood they have has a lot to do with how much money is in the family and whether there is, you know, room for a nurturing, loving environment, or whether everyone is stressed out about, you know, paying for their heating and their mortgage and everything else. So living in a
townhouse, obviously, is the major stressor you're talking about.
Yeah, living in a townhouse. Yeah.
Hey, I lived in a townhouse growing up, but people got shot down the road. It's not the same.
depends on the townhouse, doesn't it? There are some very nice townhouses out there. It was an interesting thing for him to draw on, wasn't it? Like that people who live in townhouses are somehow lesser. I wonder how the folks living in mobile home parks feel about.
I just, to me, it was the empty street. Growing up where I did, the streets are never empty of pedestrians where I grew up, because everybody takes the bus. Mm-hmm. Very few people have cars, as opposed to like the suburbs. Mm-hmm. A street that empty, that means everyone has a garage that they pull into, and they have an entry right into their house. And so the neighbors don't see each other. It's this like antiseptic suburban, I got mine, you get yours kind of lifestyle that I just found so telling. Mm.
Well, they can't really let people near Andrew Scheer, because we see what happens in photographs when that happens. He looks like he's robotic, and like he's a Ken doll that isn't fully articulated.
Topic. Just the fails of the various communications campaigns, like Trudeau riding the bus. Andrew Scheer's like, apparently there was an apocalypse that like made all the people in the world disappear right before he shot the commercial. Like, what are these people doing?
Yeah, he looked like he was at the Superman's Fortress of Solitude. He was all alone. But yes, you're right, Leanna. That's another topic. Yes. I think that we've had a lot to say tonight. I hope everybody who's listening has followed. There's been some dense stuff, some economic theory that I think has been pretty well explained. You don't need a thesaurus or a dictionary or a textbook to understand what we've been talking about. I'm not sure if we've all come to the same conclusion at the end, which is that invariably, when a conservative government in this case says they're going to put more money back in your pocket, you're not going to feel a huge relief. It's not the life-changing, month-to-month bill-changing experience that you hope it's going to be.
I have a litmus test. Yes. I have a litmus test for that, because the average family can't handle a $400 to $500 expense. So unless the amount of money Andrew Scheer is going to put in the pocket of Canadians is going to be more than $400 to $500 a month, it's meaningless.
And that's not going to happen. Okay.
That's not going to happen.
All right. I want to thank everybody for joining me tonight. I want to thank John Shepherd, who's out in Newfoundland and Labrador. Yay. Thank you, John, for joining us. I want to thank Justin Whitehead, who is in, where are you now?
Vancouver Island.
Vancouver Island. And you know, the thing is, every time you're on a show, mm-hmm. Justin, I ask you where you are, and it's always the same answer. And for some reason, I don't remember.
It's because I went away for 10 days around when we started all this. It. And it. I
was that's right. Out. You were moving around. You were like Carmen Sandiego. Yep. I didn't know where you were. Okay, that's correct. Okay, thank you. There's a reason. Leanna Kersner in, north of Toronto. Is that?
I love that we've like represented all the coasts of Canada in this one. This worked out really well.
And Andrew McLeod, Legislative Bureau Chief for the Tyee.ca, who is coming to us from Victoria. Thank you very much for joining us. And I want to thank everybody out there who's listening. If you've listened to our podcast the last couple of weeks, you've heard that we started about a month ago with FU Politics, with our 6 series. Within the first week, we were in the top 20 on iTunes Canada, and there are thousands to choose from there. We were in the top 20. Within 10 days, we were in the top 5, and we knocked out CBC and BBC. Didn't knock them out. We just passed them. We lapped them. We even lapped The Economist, which blows my mind. And we're sitting next to New York Times, which is a testament to the fact that there's a lot of people out there who want to understand these issues, but don't want to have people yelling at each other, because that doesn't really promote any understanding. And I hope that we haven't used too much jargon, and any jargon we've used today, we've explained, because I think jargon is a barrier to a lot of people understanding what's going on in politics. And people really do want to understand politics. They really do want to understand what's going on in their lives, but it's just very, very difficult with all the things, the pressures, the family life, work. It's very difficult. And then to sit down and see people yelling at each other, it's not anything that's educational. So we've done very well with the number of audience, but what we still need is support from you out there. It's great that you're listening, but we need your support. We need you to help us out, to be a patron at patreon.com/FU Network TV. If you want to make a one-time support donation at PayPal, we're at FUNetworkTV@gmail.com is where you address that to. You got to help us out, because right now, the only other online service that is talking about politics that is notable is Ezra Levant's The Rebel. Oh, and they are a group, if you don't know them, you're lucky. It's a group that is not very Canadian in its attitudes, very racist. I think that we can do better in Canada. And that's what we're trying to do here at FU Politics. Let's not let Canada be represented online by The Rebel. Join us, because the FU Network, FU is an attitude, but FU also stands for us. So please, patreon.com/FU Network TV, or at PayPal, FUNetworkTV@gmail.com. Everybody, thank you for joining us. Thanks to all the panelists, and we'll see you next time on the No Bullpen. I'm Stephen Kersner.
This is fun! The FU Network!